This is the voice of contract management, presented by the law firm of Kroll & Mooring, exclusively for NCMA. Stay up to date on all things contract management, 5 minutes at a time. Our team at Kroll & Mooring presents these podcasts to keep you up to speed on a bi-monthly basis. We will cover everything from regulatory updates to crucial changes that impact the government contracting community. Thank you so much for joining us. We've got a packed episode, quite a bit to cover today. So we're going to be covering a new GSA proposed rule on AI and large language models, an executive order on post-quantum cryptography, a recent GAO decision that's really a cautionary tale on bid protest filing deadlines, and we're also going to cover the latest on the FAR overhaul. Let's start with the FAR overhaul. Here's really the key headline. The FAR overhaul is officially moving from class deviation phase into formal rulemaking. On June 23rd, the FAR Council proposed the first tranche of proposed rules covering 17 parts of the FAR, everything from part one on the system itself to parts five and six on how to publicize actions and the competition requirements. And then we've got updates on part 40 on information security and supply chain security. So really this moves the overhaul from class deviations, which we've seen, and that's been in process for about a year, into a formal notice and comment rulemaking phase. Industry and government will have about 30 days to submit and review comments, with the comment period formally closing in mid-July. There is a lot to get through here. It's about, 1,000 pages of proposed rules. And in general, it seems that the proposed rules really track the class deviations, but there are some relatively minor differences. And there are a few examples where the proposed rules were carried forward from other prior publications. So for example, there was a prior proposed rule on safeguarding CUI that would have been incorporated in the FAR. That had been dormant for a little bit. We're now seeing it brought forward into this proposed rule. So it's a mix of a few different things, but certainly an important milestone in the RFO process. Yuan, let me turn it over to you to talk about this GSA AI rule.
Definitely an important update from GSA that has been getting a lot of industry attention. On June 17th, GSA published a revised proposed clause that's titled Basic Safeguarding of Data Within Large Language Model AI Systems. So this is a substantially reworked version of an earlier draft GSAR clause that was released in March. And the revised clause is more narrowly tailored, and there are several key headlines we'll talk through today. So first, let's focus on scope. The revised clause only applies where government data will be processed by a large language model, so an LLM. It carves out LLMs that are embedded in common commercial products like word processors, navigation tools, and situations where LLM functionality is merely incidental to the primary purpose of the contract. So that's a meaningful narrowing from the original version of the clause, which applied broadly to any contract for AI capabilities without actually defining the term. Second, the revised clause introduces mandatory role-based flowdown provisions. Prime contractors need to identify which of four defined supply chain roles their LLM vendors fill. So whether it's a developer, systems operator, systems integrator, or service provider, and flow down role-specific companion clauses to each. So that broadens the universe of companies with compliance obligations beyond just the prime. Third, let's go to IP and acceptable use rights. The original clause granted the government a license to use a contractor's AI system for any lawful government purpose for the duration of the contract. The revised clause now pulls that back significantly. The government's license is limited to the specific purposes and scope of the work in the contract, and the contractor retains ownership of the underlying LLM, base models, and a newly defined category of background data. So essentially pre-existing proprietary content incorporated into the LLM's processing. Fourth, on sourcing, the original clause flat out prohibited the use of any AI components made or controlled by non-US entities. Now, the revised clause replaces that with a more flexible standard. Contractors need to maximize the use of LLMs that are developed, managed, and operated by U.S. incorporated entities, but incidental foreign developed components like open source libraries and published research are permissible so long as they don't introduce security or foreign control risks. Fifth, the revised clause retains a requirement that LLMs must be developed and monitored in accordance with unbiased AI principles. So, meaning that the model must be truthful, prioritize historical accuracy, and refrain from manipulating responses to favor ideological positions. But the revised clause does add meaningful contractor protections that were not in the original version. There's now a written notice and cure requirement before the government can terminate for cause, a cap on decommissioning liability, confidentiality protections around the government's basis for any non-compliance determinations, and there's an express carve-out for trade secrets. Contractors are not required to disclose proprietary source code, model weights, trade secrets. Written comments on this revised clause are due on August 3rd, and GSA also scheduled a public listening session in Washington, D.C. on July 14th. So if your company provides or uses LLMs on federal contracts, this is definitely one to review closely. Peter, back to you.
Now let's turn to an executive order signed on June 22nd titled Securing the Nation Against Advanced Cryptographic Attacks. This one really squarely focuses on post-quantum cryptography transition, and it contains some of the most concrete contractor-facing requirements we've seen in this space. There's been a lot of discussion about this risk and how the government and contractors need to respond. The headline provision from this EO is really Section 6. And what it says is that within 180 days, the FAR Council is directed to publish a proposed rule requiring covered contractors to comply with NIST's Federal Information Processing Standards, including all FIPS incorporated standards relating to post-quantum cryptographic compliant algorithms. And the deadline for that cutover is meant to be December 31 of 2030. So quite a bit of time, but a lot to get through. Section 6 also adds another layer. Within 270 days, the FAR Council is meant to publish a proposed rule requiring contractors to implement vulnerability disclosure policies consistent with NIST guidelines. Now, importantly, those policies have to incorporate reports of cryptographic vulnerabilities, including testing for lack of suitable encryption and the use of non-FIPS approved algorithms. On the agency side, the EO sets some pretty aggressive timelines. For example, all high-value assets and impact systems must transition to post-quantum cryptography for key establishments by December 31 of 2030 and for digital signatures by December 31 of 2031. We're also seeing agencies already start to act. So for example, on June 23rd, we saw the Pentagon issue its initial strategy document. So there's a lot of movement on this topic as well. Now we're going to shift gears, and Yuan, I'll turn it over to you for an update on a protest.
Great. A recent GAO decision, O'Ready LLC, is a reminder that when it comes to protest timeliness, there are really two clocks you need to be watching. In this case, O'Ready filed three pre-award protests challenging the terms of three solicitations. Each solicitation closed on May 15th of 2026 at 5 o'clock p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. So that's 7 p.m. Eastern. O'Ready submitted its protest to GAO between 6:14 and 6:23 p.m. Eastern. So that's well before the solicitation closing time. And you would think that they were timely, but they were not. Here's the trap. Under GAO's regulations, specifically under 4 CFR section 21.0G, a document is only considered filed on a given day if it's received in GAO's electronic protest docketing system by 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Anything received after that cutoff is treated as filed on the next business day. So even though O'Ready hit submit before the solicitation closed, GAO treated each protest as filed on May 18th, which was after the deadline. So O'Ready tried a creative workaround. It had emailed copies of each protest to the contracting officer before the solicitation closed,
and argue that those emails constituted timely agency-level protests, which would have made the later GAO filings timely as follow-on protests. But GAO didn't bite. The emails expressly stated that they were copies of the GAO protests. The documents were addressed to GAO. They invoked GAO's regulations and requested relief from GAO, not the agency, and all three protests were dismissed. So the takeaway here is pretty straightforward, but it's easy to miss. If you're filing a pre-award protest at GAO, you need to track two deadlines, the solicitation's closing time and GAO's 5:30 p.m. Eastern filing cutoff. So where a solicitation closes after 5:30 p.m. Eastern or on a weekend or federal holiday, you have to file in advance. And if there's any uncertainty about your deadline, get counsel involved early because GAO will dismiss a protest filed even seconds late, regardless of its merits. Peter?
That wraps up a lot of news. Things we'll be watching. Thanks so much for joining us. We will close this edition out. Thanks for listening to the Voice of Contract Management, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring exclusively for NCMA. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to discuss all things government contracting. In the meantime, explore your learning opportunities at www.ncmahq.org/coursecatalog.